Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And today we are talking about maroonage, but we are doing it from a slightly different perspective. Now, when we hear stories from the book of Daniel, we're typically hearing stories about the writing on the wall and Daniel in the lion's den and the three Hebrew boys in the fiery furnace. And those are typically the things that we get in church, in the lectionary, or wherever we hear these messages. But what Daniel was doing is something that I think is relevant to Blacks in America. So The last half of the book of Daniel, chapter 7 through 12, that's the apocalyptic genre portion of the book. But the first half, chapters 1 through 6, that is Daniel discussing how he exists in a community where he's the minority. So it's like a minority community living in exile.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So just a little bit of background. After Israel escaped Egypt, they committed that genocide that we talked about in a previous episode, God, the liberator and the conqueror. They did that. Mm-hmm. They lived in the land and eventually they were kicked out of their land in what's called the Babylonian exile that started in 600 BCE. And that was a period of about 61 years. And so for 61 years, a lot of the Jews had moved or were exiled to Babylon. Now, the first wave of this exile was all of the, think about them as the privileged people or the elite, or the educated. They were moved right out and they stayed in Babylon and then more followed. So after King Cyrus came in around 539 BCE, so this is like 61 years later, King Cyrus said, okay, I'm going to let you return to your land. So this was the end of the exile. Now, the thing that happened with the exile was while the Jews were in Babylon, some of them built names for themselves. They established businesses and established lives in Babylon. And so when King Cyrus allowed them to go back to Israel, a lot of them stayed. And so they ended up in this place. Now, Daniel is writing the book of Daniel from that space. He's in Babylon and has kind of built a name for himself. And is one of those people who stayed behind. So For Black Americans, that feels like what happened at the end of slavery. So instead of, you know, slavery ending, the emancipation happening, Juneteenth happening, and then we go back to Africa, a lot of us stayed here. And If we're here, we're here. And so we're living in still white supremacist patriarchal culture, but we are African descendants.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the parallel that we're setting up. What Daniel was writing is the playbook for how to survive in that environment. And we should be, at least as Black Americans, looking at the book of Daniel, at least the first six chapters, as lessons on how to survive in that difficult environment.
Mm-hmm.
That brings me back to an idea of maroonage.
Right.
Maroonage is basically African descendants who created these settlements apart from slavery. They separated from the community and exercised to affirm their own humanity. Whether they were brutalized through slavery, had serious disagreements with the institution of slavery, or just got off the boat and just ran, they didn't want to participate in the enterprise. And so They developed their own communities. And so you had end up in Jamaica, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Saint Lucia, Haiti. Many of those island nations are marooned communities.
Yes, and we also have a large maroon community during that time in Virginia called the Great Dismal Swamp.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the idea that people should attach to is that marooned communities exist prior to those communities, let's say, moving and progressing towards some sort of equity in general policies or in the community at large that they have separated from. So you are marooned so long as you are not participating not only in the community structure, but also the economics of that community. So it's not so much that they were escaped slaves as much as they were misplaced wealth doing something else with itself. They had taken back over the definition of their worth in their own community. They were generating their own needs within their own community. It's important to understand that because that generation of their own resources predicated where the community ultimately progresses to when it comes to either restoration of being able to join the larger community, some sort of, let's say, freedom forward movement, or just gaining some equity amongst those people or amongst that larger group that they could not live amongst peacefully.
Right. And so you bring up a great example of the Great Dismal Swamp in Virginia. The Maroon communities were not just afar off on islands and things like that. Maroon exactly. communities would exist yeah. even directly outside of a plantation. There's since situations where members of those Maroon communities would revisit the plantation at night to reclaim some of the stuff that the plantation had. So they would steal resources from the plantation. Sometimes they would mm-hmm. burn the plantation down. And so like the marooned idea, yes, it applies to communities that are not here, that are completely separated from slavery, but also, like you said, that this is almost a ontological affirmation of who you are. And so if I'm not getting that somewhere else, it's time to go. And so we take that and build our own community.
Yep.
So that's what we are here. So we have Israel in Babylon learning how to survive. We have blacks in America in a system that is still operating like Babylon mm-hmm. and trying to figure out how to survive. And so that's yeah. kind of the basis for this show. So looking at Daniel from that perspective, Daniel's living in two periods. It's a Persian rule period and also a Hellenized period where Antiochus IV Epiphanes, he's Hellenizing or bringing Greek culture to that environment. And so Daniel is taking place over a long period of time where you got these two cultures that the Jews are in, and how do they maintain is the chief question. Is it possible to hold on to your culture and succeed in this Gentile world or this foreign mm. world? So one of the things that Daniel does is this cool is he keeps his diet. In Daniel 1:8, he maintains a kosher diet. And so the rulers in Babylon wondered how they were concerned that he would be weaker. And Daniel showed himself to be stronger, actually, than everyone else who was eating a non-kosher diet.
Mm-hmm.
The Gentile king, Nebuchadnezzar, actually ended up recognizing Daniel's God as the true God. We mentioned at the head of the show, the three brothers in the furnace, you know, that persecution was there. And so the lesson there from a Jewish perspective is they were persecuted, but not destroyed. And that happens more than once. It happens in the fiery furnace. It also happens with Daniel in the lion's den, that in this environment, you're persecuted, but you're not destroyed. And then because of their faithfulness, the king actually loses the kingdom and eventually comes to know God. That was Nebuchadnezzar.
Mm-hmm.
God is making all of these things happen. So God is protecting them in the fiery furnace. God is ensuring that Daniel has the strength that he needs and ensuring that he succeeds in this environment. He's ensuring that Nebuchadnezzar loses his kingdom and ultimately dies. So that's kind of the lessons that Daniel is bringing to play in the text. Mm-hmm. So that's the Hebrew story, the Jewish story of the book of Daniel and living as our terminology, maroon community in the empire. But how is that relevant to us in America? So what are the things that we can learn from this story, if anything, that applies to our situation? Not everything will apply. This is not a church service where I'm trying to make everything just fit over like a one-to-one correlation. It doesn't work that way. But
right,
that doesn't
right.
mean that there aren't things that we can't learn.
Yes. So this is almost like so we know that the Bible presents in different ways. It's definitely a book that holds the word, that people adhere to it, acknowledge because of their faith. It is also a history book. It is also a guideline. So think about this in terms of it being a reflection of a historical period where if you were wondering what people did it when they were seemingly suffering so much or just seemed out of place or just seemed targeted, here is an example that we were able to find and connect and correlate, but we're not going to force it to fit because I think when you force things, you don't leave enough space for the truth to be organic and to take shape. So there are things that we just want to point out and kind of see where the conversation goes from there, because we're in no way naive, but we do like to call attention to patterns.
Exactly. So one of the things Daniel did in this case, Daniel retained his God, Yahweh. Daniel honored, worshiped Yahweh, and ultimately that ended up being the God that was respected because of Daniel's faith. And so when I look at marooned communities, the example mm-hmm. that I see of that is the Creole example. So
yes.
Through Santeria, African descendants have retained that element of their faith. And where Protestantism cut our connection with our ancestors, Catholicism absorbed it. And so mm-hmm. in Santeria, you bring your gods with you you subvert them into the dominant religion, but they're there. And so that mm-hmm. was one of the strategies that worked for blacks in America. Now, because America is white supremacy is what it is, those gods become demonized through the way that voodoo is viewed and some of the practices are viewed. But those Africans, for their own human affirmation, were able to retain the thing that they brought with them.
Taking your God back, you have to understand that imagery can be used to steal your God away from you. So if you believe in a God that loves you and a God that cares for you, but yet the imagery that is constantly housing your God is the same imagery of those that persecute you, you have to be very intentional about connecting deeper to exactly who you believe, the God that loves you. Who is that entity? Down to, you know, does it reflect me? The history supports that some of the imagery that we've seen of this God is not accurate. History supports that. So you have to be, I would encourage the freedom and the ability, the common sense, intellectual, and academic approach that would lead you back to a more clear understanding of who these peoples actually were, because so much of it has been co-opted in a system that doesn't benefit the Maroon community.
That's the thing. These are almost personal questions that we could be asking ourselves. Like, how does this translate to me? One of the things that Daniel did, Daniel honored his culture, or he remembered or retained his culture.
Yes. And so it's going to be important. So this is where we had said a God that affirms blackness, a God that loves black people, a God that hears and is compassionate toward our position in the greater community and is compassionate and protective over what we have had to establish and maintain so that we can keep our roots as strong as possible. Bring all of that into the room. There has to be reclamation over all of that apparatus that ultimately forms who we believe our gods are.
Right. And so as we attempt on this show, and I think we do a good job of trying to think critically about this. When we speak of honoring your culture, we're not romanticizing it as if, let's say, the culture that came with Africans was 100% what should be emulated. There are things in the culture that should be remembered as lessons, as so you don't do them again, you don't repeat them. Mm-hmm. So if patriarchy is one of those hallmarks of that culture, then that's one thing you need to know. You need to remember it, but then you need to adapt to it. But then the other things that actually are helpful to you and affirming to you, you also remember those things and honor them.
Absolutely.
The other thing that happened, we said that they were persecuted and they survived. This week, that hit really close to home for us because of COVID-19, many of us have been in the home, if we're lucky enough or fortunate enough to have that situation. We've been in the home. One of the things that comes with being in the home is you don't have the persistent threat of leaving your home and all of the dangers that come with that. And so even though we've had this impending dread about what happens when I go outside, am I going to get sick? Being in the house actually does minimize the risk of encountering this criminal justice system. And so there's these two things at play where you're like, okay, I can't go outside because it's dangerous out there. But for black people, it's always dangerous. It's just not dangerous the way it's always been dangerous. And so we have relief from the one area while we're sheltering from the other danger. But with the death of Ahmaud Arbery, that brings back the remembrance of that other persistent danger for us. That thing that says you're not safe doing anything outside the walls of your home. And in the case of Botham Jean, he was in his home doing it. And so the trepidation that comes from living as a black person in America, it seems insurmountable at times, because when does it stop? When do we when do we get the opportunity to rest or breathe or just take a break from this pursuit of white supremacy that's always on our back heels, always trying to track us down? Like, how does that happen? And this week was a really tough week for us.
Yes, it was extremely tough this week. I think here we just need to read that we will survive. And this is a that is an acknowledgement of the group, because there's always been the cost. There's always been the threat, and there's always been the cost. And we will ultimately survive, but we have to acknowledge those that we lose along the way. It happened in Daniel's time. It's happening to us right now. It has happened with every Maroon community, because we experience proximity and being ostracized at the same time. So you're right there, but at any moment, your presence in your own, let's say in the greater community, it can feel like a threat to some, be made to be perceived as a threat to somebody. And you can even experience rejection, being ostracized, being isolated. And all of that is intentional. It is not being made up in your mind. The gaslighting at this time is just out of control. We will survive writ large. It is exceptionally important at this time for us to remain close to one another. It is exceptionally important at this time for us to honor and to speak one another's name and to speak good over one another. These things may seem simple, but the way that we felt this pain this week in light of this senseless murder, it just made it feel like it was a doubling down on not just a pandemic. Like, a pandemic isn't even enough to get people to treat their fellow human with respect and compassion, to give them the benefit of the doubt of life as opposed to the final sentence of death. And it's not something that I think for a while we were processing it as our elders are going into these hospitals and things might not be traditionally the same for us. This might affect how we honor and how we practice certain, you know, transitions again within our community. What we are seeing is that whatever it is, even though it is called for healthcare workers to be on the front line, it is called for everybody to adapt. The American workforce, if it can, is working from home. Those who cannot work are, you know, precarious in the system and they need support. All of these things going on, and you still find time for the foolishness. It's particularly offensive right this second. It's particularly perverse right this second. And this is where I say, and history provides the pattern for the behavior. So we know what we're talking about. You actually are not making it up. You know what you're talking about. You know what you see. You know what you feel. We have to acknowledge the reality, the deep reality of the situation, that lives are still going to be a part of the cost. But we have to double down on the only natural response, which is we have to stick together even closer. We have to stick even closer to one another when it is like this.
So in Daniel's case, we saw the fiery furnace happened. And then later, I believe in chapter six, I guess, the lions then happened. And the lesson that I draw from that is that persecution does not stop. And that is true for us today. Like, we can't get a break from white supremacy to come together as a global community to tackle a global issue. White supremacy is still hunting us, no matter what's going on outside.
Literally.
Yes. And so you're right. The ability, or the fact that we have to stick together, is so vital for us, because not only are a lot of us on the front lines, but we're on the front lines and working and not working. So losing jobs, we're on the front line of the financial portion of this, in addition to being an essential worker element of this. Mm-hmm. And then you got family members, like you said, that are being sick and you can't help them as some of them transition and things like that. Like, you got all of that going against you. And then you have this other thing that really is, it can't take a break. Can't pause for a minute for this. And that's just like, I'm struggling to find the words for this, because I can't, the way that happened, like the defense bothered me. Like, they thought he was a burglar for what? He was jogging. He didn't have a bag. He didn't have anything. Look, we know that's not true. That's bullshit. Don't do that.
Right. It's perverse. So this is what the challenge is. I feel like what the challenge always is can we tell the truth? You have to be able to tell your truth. You cannot apologize for it. The truth of the matter is that we will need one another. Period. That's the end of the sentence. That is the end of the talk. We will need one another. We will have to replicate systems of survival and systems of coexistence that used to be able to, let's say, be readily seen in the community. You kind of knew during periods of segregation, not only what, let's say, the greater white community would say, well, here's yours and here's mine, but you also had the presence of an intra-community. So the community within our own, let's say, within our section, where you knew, here's where I can get my needs met. Here's where I can get the resources that I need. Here's where I can get fulfilled. Here's where I can get what I need to feel whole for X amount of time. And these things are still existent in the community. And we have to make intentional and sustained choices to support that which has been built for our support. So we have already talked about that in terms of our schools. We have already talked about that in terms of our churches. We have touched on it, the importance of being able to retain wealth within our community. Now is where you have to make, it's like baking a cake. If all of those are the ingredients, we are ready to mix it together and we are ready to bake it. It will take time, but we have to be actively doing whatever it is that we can commit to doing consistently. The reason why I say that we have to think about this in terms of us and not I is because the I is not culturally competent for the community.
Right.
That I is not ours. That I is about the community we're embedded within.
That's so powerful because we got to know the difference. So as a maroon community, you don't have the physical separation from everything, but we are segregated in this. So think about your neighborhoods and what they look like. What is the demographic in that neighborhood? Chances are it's a lot of us together, and that's intentional. That isn't our fault. That's something that happened, but we are a we in those environments. Mm-hmm. And so Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, I heard him speak one time. He passes right up the road in Baltimore near you. He said, we have far more in our hands than we are using for the liberation of our people.
Absolutely.
And the myth of scarcity keeps us from using it. So we think that there isn't enough. Like, I got to get mine. And that's that out exterior community pressing in against us, that mm-hmm. ideology that's saying, we're doing it. You're right. That's not ours. That's not ours. That's theirs.
Mm-mm, but that's theirs.
In our pursuit to get from wherever we are, we look around us and say, well, what's the right answer? What should I be doing? That I mm-hmm. is not the thing that you should be doing. The we is the thing that sustained you. The we is the thing that allowed you to get to where you are now. It protects you. And if we aren't embracing that, then we're becoming something that we're not. And that is not the lesson in Daniel. That he didn't become something he wasn't. Daniel is Joseph 2.0. Joseph adopted the Egyptian ideology. Egyptian culture became what Joseph was. And that ended up being the mechanism for his people to become enslaved. The Hebrew Bible was written so that Daniel is the better version of Joseph. And so where Joseph fails, Daniel succeeds. Where Joseph adopts the Egyptian diet, Daniel keeps his kosher diet. Where Joseph married Egyptians, Daniel does not do that. And that's the lesson that we have to take hold of. Like you can't do that.
I want to go back to this point about the diet, because I feel like we've discussed it before, but this is so very important as you look out in your community and you figure out what type of food is there. You got to be able to look at the whole entire picture. There's even an example in that by Daniel keeping his diet, it means he maintained control over his food supply. Okay. So there's energy right now. There's been energy for years and recent years of people planting urban gardens, community gardens, trying to expand their knowledge of basic fruits, vegetables, and herbs. Why? Because we realized, much like our forebears, that the food can be medicine. The food can also kill you. So in communities and in neighborhoods where there is no fresh food, you are forced to adopt the diet that is left over for you. You have to be intentional where you can. If it's a case of I don't have the skill to cook the food, or I don't have the desire to eat the food, just know what price you're paying for that. The price could be, let's connect some dots here. So you don't feed yourself well. You do not treat your vessel healthily. You are not strong enough to defend yourself or anybody else. That does not lend itself to maintaining your community, your home, your countenance, even as all around you is pressing in against you. That's why it's important. You control your diet. No one can starve you. If you control your diet, if you control your food supply. And what did I say about maroon communities? They precede the bigger action that moves the whole community forward. It's important. These are all pictures. You don't control your diet, you might be at risk of developing those comorbidities that are exacerbated by things such as what we're facing with the pandemic. It's a picture. Mm. It's not one situation. It is a picture. And you do that. You control your food supply, whether they let you shop with them or not. You control your food supply, whether or not somebody is willing to take your money today or not. You do not have to eat what has been left over for you. It weakens you. The pandemic hit, people who didn't even have health insurance turned back to the natural remedies of their forebears. This is important. My grandmother taught me to make teas. Thank God, because that type of knowledge might take us further than me needing a prescription for everything, than me needing to constantly engage with a system that doesn't want to serve me all the time, doesn't always want to maintain my life at the height of the quality that it could be maintained. You have to start doing things that make sense. You have to stop apologizing for your humanity. I'm sorry, I need to eat healthily. You damn right I do. I'm sorry, I need medicine. You are goddamn right I do. I need to be served. I need the things. We can't always think that the same systems that have been designed intentionally to not serve us are just going to snap back and do the right thing. We have to be intentional. And there's more than one way to turn the neck of a people that doesn't want to see your humanity.
That persecution is not going to stop. They're going to keep pressing in against you. If we're not protecting ourselves, if we're not protecting ourselves, our bodies, and each other, then we can't win this. We can't be strong. So whether you are taking lessons from Daniel or Israel or from French Creole, Jamaicans, whatever you take your examples from, understand that being marooned in the empire requires something of you. It requires you to, one, not assimilate, because that's the whole reason that you're set apart. You're set apart so that you can build yourself and the people that look like you up, that to reaffirm the thing that's been torn down. So you can't do that by adopting the thing that tore you down.
You can't. Absolutely not.
This is an exceptionally difficult week for us. We had Aubrey at the beginning. We got Andre Harrell and Little Richard on the same day. It's a lot of lost people. Mm. It's a whole lot happening at one time. Talk to your people. Get on Zoom. Get on the phone. Text. Do whatever you need to do. Build this up. Like, be around. Yeah. Be around the people. I mean, that's in addition to everything else you have going on. I know it's a lot. For this show, we just wanted to kind of give some example or an example of what that looks like, and put it on your mind that yeah, we're here embedded in this empire, in this Babylon, but that doesn't mean that you're not you.
Exactly.
And if you don't know who you are, then you find you. Do everything you can.
Please.
Find yourself.
Oh my gosh. We've never lived in a time like this where the actions and the critique are in such real time. You know, the actions take place on one day and the critique is right there. So that means that information that can change people's mind is flying around at record speed. I say that to say, just like the example is affording us, the example of Nebuchadnezzar recognizing the true God, we could, you know, see a recognition in the land that things are going wrong. I am encouraged by the examples that I see that people's eyes are open. And even if what they see is heartbreaking, sad, and disappointing, they are seeing it. Okay. And they are beginning or continuing to articulate the critiques that are rightful and justified. They are articulating righteous anger. You are angry, but your anger is justified. Your anger is not the action. Your anger is the reaction. We're trying to get at the actions. We're trying to get at the structures. But you can educate your enemy one of two ways. Either you can educate them to try to compromise with you because they see that you are a formidable opponent, or you will educate them on how to ultimately defeat you. So you can show them, but you got to be sure and you need to be clear that our actions betray our words. So your actions in real life betray your online personas. Your actions in real life, your actions outside of your home betray what's going on inside of your home. Okay. All of this week has been an example of the difference between what people actually do and what they say. Because they said it was one thing, but what they actually did was another. So we have to be very, very, again, intentional about what we teach the empire about us. If you ever wondered what you were going to do if you were in those times that you've seen in pictures, you are there. That is what you are in. And it is important that you know that. What are you going to teach the empire about you? What are you going to teach? And it calls into question, what have you taught others about you? And what do you know about yourself?
What do you know about yourself? That's the question that we all need to sit with. What are we going to teach the empire about us? We'll see you in 2 weeks.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
For Faith Uncut, I'm Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.